Myth, episode 737 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and as we have learned since Magellan, sometimes the estimates of when those voyages of discovery might return get pushed back a little.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm just thrilled that there is no Gambit news this week. Thank you.
And this is Runsum from Australia, and damn it, I had it all timed out for January. Grr, come on, guys.
Some things just can't be relied upon. Like, launch dates of starships. Let's put it that way. We are going to be talking about the news from the past week, roughly the 11th to the 17th of September. And we are going to be getting into all kinds of different aspects of the genre and so forth. So before we do any of that, Edmund, if you could give your usual disclaimer.
Certainly. We try and spoil you with everything we tell you. If it's the news, we hope you're happy. If it's episodes, you'd better have watched them first.
That's right. That's right. And we are going to start right off here with what is probably our headline story. So I didn't bother reclassifying it, but it's right here out of CBS and their latest news regarding Star Trek Discovery. Gary, if you could please.
Eek, where to start? I guess first off is the fact that they've pushed it back. It no longer will have a fall or possibly January release, but now they've pushed it back as far as May of 2017 to start their wonderful pay-per-view network with commercials. They feel like they need more time to get everything together, and honestly, they haven't even announced any casting yet, so I'm glad that they're doing it right rather than rushing just to meet an arbitrary date that they came up with. There's a lot of other news that happened along with it as well. Brian Fuller was discussing it on Twitter, of all places, and he had mentioned the fact that the original series episode Balance of Terror, which involved the Romulans, is going to be a touchstone for the story. Now, a lot of fans have taken this, gosh, geez, about 1,000 different ways. Me, I'm just hoping for the nice Centurion helmet to come back. But we'll have to see what they mean by a touchstone. Is this going to be the focus of the whole series, the Romulans versus the Federation, or are they going to go elsewhere with it? We'll have to see how much of a focus it ends up being, but it definitely is our first sort of glance into the mindset of the series. Some other news of interest, they announced earlier before these announcements that the main character would not be the captain and would more than likely be a woman. They've gone even further now to discuss that character will be nicknamed Number One, in homage of Majel Barrett's original character from The Cage, who was the first officer on the Enterprise during the Pike era. So that's sort of a very nice nod, and I, as a fan, I felt it really sort of clicked in well. As many issues as I do have with the show and some of the decisions they've made, this is definitely not one of them, and it's very encouraging. Other than that, they've shown us one or two other little tidbits of slight pictures of unfinished antenna and a few other little things. So will Andorians be in the future too? We'll have to see. They've also noted for people who aren't keeping up that the ship shown in the teaser preview is not the actual ship. How close it will be to that, they haven't revealed yet. We'll just have to wait at this point until May of 2017 to find out.
Yeah. Bronstom, thoughts?
I'm slightly upset that we're going to have to wait even longer to get a new Brian Fuller show, and B, a new Star Trek show. But the fact that, like Gary said, like the articles have been saying, that they haven't finished writing the first season, they haven't made any casting announcements, it's probably the smart play to push it back a bit. The Balance of Terror comparison is really intriguing. I watched that episode not too long ago, and there's all this speculation about how that's going to be the influence. Like, is it going to be about the Romulans? Is it going to be about a hostile first contact? Even though Balance of Terror wasn't quite a first contact, but it was the first time they'd met the Romulans in ages, and it was not the most polite, pleasant experience. Or is it an emphasis on the fact that Balance of Terror was pretty much this extended chase battle sequence, a la the last act of Wrath of Khan? That's kind of the one that I would lean towards if I was speculating, and what I would hope for, because the idea of, like, let's take Balance of Terror, that kind of storyline, and play it out over an entire season, is really intriguing.
See, I'm with you where I think that this was more in terms of a tonal type of inspiration than I think some of the more literal ways that people are interpreting it. I think that they're saying that look at the way and at the tone and at the in some senses the structure of what they did there. The reason that Balance of Terror is so popular is that it really is a submarine combat film in space.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, it's got that element. It's got a different view of how the Enterprise functions.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of lower decks aspects. Like that episode opens with Kirk in the middle of officiating a wedding between two crewmen.
Right.
And they're interrupted by the story of the week. And we see those crewmen who are going to be married running around the ship, going about their duties in the midst of this incident. And you also have one of the bridge officers almost goes crazy and tries to kill Spock because, well, look, obviously he's in league with the Romulans. And you had that great bit from Kirk about how, you know, leave your bigotry in your quarters. It has no place on the bridge. Yeah, the actual wording of Brian Fuller's tweet is like he posted a photo from that episode with the quote is a favorite TOS episode, Balance of Terror, is a touchstone for the Star Trek Discovery story arc, Star Trek 50, Live Long and Prosper 50. Like it's very vague. Like you can read a lot into it, and I guess I think we're probably we're leaning towards what we'd prefer, but I think the people who lean into the idea of like well maybe it is about the Romulans or stuff like that it's not an invalid assumption. But yeah, I definitely like this idea of a almost BSG-esque tense starship thriller in which the main character is, like it's been saying, is not the captain, is someone, presumably the first officer, but someone who would maybe have more contact with lower decks characters. And yeah, between that and the long-form serialized story arc, I love the idea of getting to dig into a Star Trek story in a much more in-depth way, and especially if it's going to be a very ship function centric, almost techno thriller kind of thing, because those are usually my favorite Star Trek stories, the ones that get very in-depth about the function of the like all that nitty-gritty life aboard the starship stuff.
Edmund, how about you? Any thoughts on this one?
Actually, you guys have kind of covered my major thoughts, but certainly I'm with you, and it and I think you're right. I think this is partially us wishing for the way we want it to be, but certainly just given the nature of Brian Fuller's usual comments about things, I really took it that it was more that tonal element from Balance of Terror, and certainly I mean given the name of Star Trek Discovery, it being set pre original series, this whole sense of the Enterprise went out on the big 5-year mission, but this is some of those forays leading up to that, where things were going to be much more uncertain and tense, and also the other element of Balance of Terror, I think, was That it was introducing that whole element of sort of of the psychological back and forth, even though they were in the midst of this military battle. It was the two commanders, having to outthink each other, so it was very much on that sort of primal psychological level, as well as just the actual physical combat and warfare level of it. And certainly, given Brian Fuller's previous work, the idea that he wants to delve into that psychological realm and conflict would certainly make sense.
Mm-hmm. That's so some good things and some bad things, I guess, in terms of the news regarding Discovery. So timing, not so favorable. Content, maybe some promise there.
The stuff about the content is insanely encouraging.
Mm. Indeed. All right, moving over to the cable world. Edmund, some news out of sci-fi.
Yes. Well, of course, sci-fi has been pleasing us for the most part with some of their recent dramatic offerings. And we now have word they've ordered 3 new pilots, a remake of the 2013 film The Machine, an adaptation of a Grant Morrison graphic novel called Happy, and Haunted, which will be a supernatural horror drama, surprisingly. The Machine will be based on the film of the same name, which starred Katie Lo- Loitz, and will be produced and written by original filmmaker Kara Dog James in association with Red and Black Films. Film producer will also executive produce the pilot, and it is set in a world that is being transformed by the emergence of artificial intelligence, exploring the epic conflict between man and technology through the lives and motivations of six interwoven characters, each of whom holds the key to humanity's victory or its destruction. And if they get Amy Acker, then I'll be even happier as one of the six. Haunted, meanwhile, is described as a supernatural horror drama about four siblings who reunite following their parents' death. They try to overcome their fractured personal relationships and find that they must also face literal ghosts from their past in order to survive. And Happy, which will be written and executive produced by Grant Morrison with Brian Taylor, based on their graphic novel of the same name, follows Nick Sachs, an intoxicated, corrupt ex-cop turned hitman who is adrift in a world of casual murder, soulless sex, and betrayal. And this is going to be on Sci-Fi? After a hit gone wrong, his inebriated life is forever changed by a tiny, relentlessly positive, imaginary, blue-winged horse.
It's Grant Morrison, so first of all, who's surprised by this?
Okay. Okay.
The word for sci-fi lately has been diversification. This certainly fits.
This qualifies. Yeah, yes. That counts. Tick that box.
Yeah. All of these have potential. Depends on how they choose to implement that potential, I guess. The machine one in particular has shades of both Person of Interest and Humans. So, kind of curious about that. Yeah, all of these look like they could have good, you know, have some promise to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just really since it was my first time through it, so I really wasn't expecting that at the end. But there's something about Happy that I just realized that I was getting flashes of Batu and his basset hand in Ghost in the Shell: Innocence.
Hmm. Nice. Okay, everyone, you have a little homework to do.
Yes.
Catch up with the reference. All right. Next, we have some news about some shows in development. In particular, we have a new show being developed at ABC by Chuck co-creator Chris Fedak. The Alphabet Network has greenlit a pilot for Deception, a magic-themed drama written by Fedak, and also boasts Uber producer Greg Berlanti and Blindspot creator Martin Garrow among its executive producers. Magician David Kwong, who has worked as creative consultant on Blindspot and the feature film Now You See Me, will serve as co-producer. As per the official logline, Deception tells the tale of a superstar magician whose career is plagued by scandal. In an effort to keep practicing the arts of deception, illusion, and influence, he teams up with the FBI to become the world's first consulting illusionist. It's a procedural.
Yes.
With a magician.
Yes.
But it's from Greg Berlanti, so at what point does this become the Zatanna show and does it move over to the CW?
Yeah. Fortunately,
We've had The Mentalist. We've had Psych. You don't get to pretend that this is a new, like, cutting-edge idea for a show.
Yeah. No, of course, we also had the misfire of Houdini and Doyle, and this seems to be an attempt to smash them into the same person.
Hmm. True. All right. Next up on our list, we have... Well, this was just an interesting little side note, Edmund, in the book category.
Yes. Yeah, well, for those who are wondering exactly what Don Draper or his real-life alter ego, Matthew Weiner, were doing after sitting on that hill in on the West Coast, Matthew Weiner, it has been announced, according to Entertainment Weekly, will publish his first novel in the fall of 2017. The novel is called Heather, The Totality, published by Little Brown and Company. The publisher is describing the book as a dark fable set in contemporary Manhattan about three people from two worlds who are on a collision course in pursuit of a beautiful child. That's certainly straying a little, you know, quite a little bit away from his writing on Mad Men and The Sopranos. But considering the literary aspirations and achievements of those series, I think we could expect to see some interesting aspects of Matthew Weiner to shine through. I seem to recall in reading interviews over the years, yes, he is one of those producers who's always wanted to have more time to write, and obviously Mad Men has now given him that opportunity.
So it would appear. And no, that's why I found it interesting, because given the, like you said, literary aspects of those other shows, this would seem to be a pretty slam dunk type of move for him, and also a fairly intriguing one for the audience. So, moving over to gaming news. Gary, this one is at least somewhat tangentially related to television.
Well, I think it's very related to television. What we're talking about is the follow-up with the South Park franchise for video games. Now, we've all heard in detail all the enjoyment and revulsion, in some cases, the stick of truth presented to all us video game players. Well, back at E3 earlier this year, they did announce that they were going to be coming up with a sequel and that it would be released before Christmas this year. Well, unfortunately, that won't be happening, and they've pushed the game into the first quarter sometime of 2017. They just feel that that it's not quite ready yet, and they're not going to rush it for the Christmas holiday. They are playing with the gameplay a little bit and trying to make it even more interesting with various combat sequences and new powers such as universe-tearing super farts and more character development for your character as he's working his way through the game. So I guess they really want to impress us the next time around, so I'll just have to hope that the game is sweet.
Yeah, I really enjoyed The Stick of Truth, so I'm looking forward to its follow-up. All right, moving over then to movie news. Mulan may be getting yet another live-action movie. That's right, one of the many projects working through the Disney system at the moment is a planned live-action version of Mulan. It doesn't seem to be too high up the priority list right now, but that may change as Sony, too, has announced plans for a live-action adaptation. It's not going near the Disney animated movie version, rather, but going closer to the roots of the story of a young woman who took her father's place in the Chinese army. So, as it says here, don't expect Sony's version to involve singing. It'll be a Chinese co-production if all goes according to plan, with a mainly Chinese cast. It will also be shot in China. There's no word on yet on who will write or direct, but the project will be overseen and funded by 2.0 Entertainment, which is also helping to fund Zombieland 2, Bad Boys 3, and a few others. So this one is interesting because of all the various adaptations out there, it would seem like Mulan is a perfect one to appeal to the Chinese audience and the Chinese production companies that are more and more the power behind major blockbuster films. Just a little commentary on that, considering the fact that even when Bronstein, I don't know if it was the same for you when you went to go see Star Trek Beyond, but it was really interesting to see that.
Beautiful extra logos.
Yeah.
That's the same was true of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, and I think one other from this summer season, but it's basically what happens where, movie, it's an American made and produced movie, doesn't do well in America, but does really well overseas. So to get sequels made, they get those overseas countries where it did well to chip in some of the funding.
Like, mm-hmm.
I get the impression Star Trek Into Darkness didn't do very well domestically, or at least not as well as they wanted, but it did gangbusters overseas.
Yeah.
And we're seeing more and more of that. I'm kind of okay with it because, you know, other countries like movies, guys.
Next up, Edmund, a little bit of news for those who are looking forward to another sequel out of G.I. Joe.
Yes, G.I. Joe 3 has been held up, and apparently the problem is that Dwayne Johnson is just too damn busy. He, of course, has recently appeared in the summer in Central Intelligence. Meanwhile, he's been shooting Baywatch. He's been shooting Fast and Furious 8. He is about to start on the reboot or continuation or whatever he feels like calling it of Jumanji. So it does appear that this was according to one of the other stars of the movie, Young Hun Lee. G.I. Joe 3 is still an active project, but there's a problem. They are waiting on the actor schedules, and the one that's the big sticking point is Dwayne Johnson. So once they get that worked out, and if they let us know, we'll let you know.
There you go. Next, Gary.
Oh, yes. This is, I guess it's not, it still is movie news, not quite casting news. There's been recently announced a deal with Margot Robbie that she signed with Warner Brothers to a first look deal. And sort of first look deal, at, it's not an actual name of a company or anything like that. What it is that they're agreeing to help co-produce movie features with her through her Lucky Chap Entertainment Company. She has already been signed, of course, to the sequel to Suicide Squad, as well as a potential spinoff for her character. And Warner Brothers is actively looking to bring more female voices to the screen, and they feel this is one of the ways they can do it. They haven't actually announced any actual productions yet, but they but this seems to be a step in the right direction for diversifying Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, of course, are jumping all over the fact that she now has the opportunity to pursue that Harley Quinn solo movie, so... that's what was tied to this, at least in many people's minds. But that's not the only news coming out of Warner Brothers, which I guess if people consider that possibility of a Harley Quinn solo film the good news, maybe some are going to consider this next one to be the not-so-good news. Gary?
Am I up already? I'm sorry.
You are.
Oh, I missed that one. Just one moment. Yes, it's been announced that the... Man of Steel is reportedly back on the schedule to produce at Warner Brothers. We weren't expecting this, but Cavill and the director have been in meetings where they're re-strategizing, as well as been working with him since he's been filming the Justice League movie, and they feel that perhaps a Superman movie might stand on its own once more. He did receive some critical acclaim from the Batman versus Superman movie, and given that comic book movies are still the rage, they feel that they could maybe do better by the Man of Steel with a second movie. The first one did receive a lot of critical disdain from some people included, and they felt that perhaps with a little adjusting that following the Justice League movie, that perhaps another Superman movie could do quite well. They haven't really said what they're going to do. I'm hoping they lighten it up several degrees, and we'll have to wait and see. They haven't announced villains. The article that I'm roughly referencing suggests perhaps Brainiac instead of Lex Luthor this time around, which might be fun. We'll have to wait and see. But I mean, the property's there, the history's there, the background is so ample to pull from. They could definitely make a good movie if they wanted to.
Isn't that the rub, though? Are they going to continue along the lines of Man of Steel, or are they going to try and, diversify?
Yeah, well, very true, because, you know, as I heard Snyder complain that Cavill smiled too much as Superman, yeah. I just flinch. They're like, oh, no, he can't do that. He must look, you know, dour all the time, or else. I'm like, do you not get the character, you know...
Balanced, though, by Geoff Johns coming out and saying that the future fare out of the DC cinematic universe was going to be more lighthearted.
Well, true.
Yeah, but it was that repositioning that kind of screwed the pooch with Suicide Squad. Like, David Ayer turned in a movie, and the studio then kicked it back to him and said, we know that we hired you to make a David Ayer movie, but this is a David Ayer movie, and we want light, fun, happy, because no one liked Batman v Superman. It's like, ugh.
Well,
I get. I mean, and if there's a movie in which to go, like, you know, bleak, it'd be Suicide Squad. Like, there's so much like wishy-washy repositioning and whatnot going on at DC that it's a poop shoot.
It's really unfortunate, because I know that some people say that the returns on Suicide Squad are disappointing and then started blaming the film. And I was like, guys, it's been very publicly mucked about with behind the scenes for about a year now.
There are three separate cuts of the film, one of which was the one that David Ayer originally turned in, one of which was the cut was assembled behind David Ayer's back by the company that did that trailer that was really popular. Like, they said, oh man, people love that trailer, let's get those guys in to cut the whole goddamn film. And then they decided, let's try and merge the two cuts. Like, oh, it's just the story is nuts.
The story of how the film was made might turn out to be even better than the film itself wound up being. So
we need like a Hearts of Darkness?
That's it. Jared Leto should be the one who is going to be behind that film, because he's got more than enough to say about it. All right.
Well, just very briefly, looping back around to the original point of the article.
Yeah.
New Man of Steel 2. I'm all for that. I love Man of Steel 1. Like, I think it's a really fantastic movie. You can say that, oh, it's too dark and serious, and mm-hmm. I mean, it's not an invalid comment, but when I think of Superman, I think of him, like, you know, he can absolutely, like, smile and be happy and take a joke, but I think of him as a serious character. Someone who takes takes a big responsibility on his shoulders and carries a big kind of weight around, and is you can go on and on about Kryptonite, but his real quote-unquote weakness, the thing that makes him as normal as anyone else, is the fact that he is as emotionally complex as any other person. And I think that Man of Steel did a really good job of playing that up. Like, it really appealed to the things I like about that character. And I think that the Superman story from Batman v Superman was really interesting and would have been much better served as Man of Steel 2 rather than combining it with Dark Knight Returns, essentially.
Coming out of Man of Steel, we had our own predictions as to what Man of Steel 2 would look like, and it was actually a lot like the plot line from Batman vs. Superman on the Superman side. In fact, when they said, oh, Batman is going to be included, we came up with ways that Batman could be included that were pretty much the way that Batman deals with Superman in that film. What kind of threw us for a loop?
Yeah, it's a pretty straightforward thing to do. But yeah, I think throwing Batman into Man of Steel 2 complicates things. It kind of muddled things up. And I mean, personally, I'm one of the few who will defend a lot of Batman v Superman. I don't think it's an amazing movie. I think the Ultimate Edition really improved things. You have to be okay with a longer film, but the things that they put back in, most of it is from the first half of the film, and most of it really clarifies what the hell is going on. Lex Luthor comes across as a much better bad guy with all those scenes back in, and the scene at the Senate, that Senate hearing and whatnot, is totally recontextualized and is a much more important part of the story that has a point that carries on for the rest of the film. If you are middling on Batman v Superman and you're okay with a longer film, I recommend checking out the Ultimate Edition and having an open mind, because I think it's a far superior film to the one they put out in theaters.
Is this on the level of the difference between the theatrical and DVD cuts of the Daredevil film, for instance?
No, I think it's a far superior.
Okay.
I think the director's cut of Daredevil is it's not that different. The director's cut of Daredevil is much better than the theatrical edition, but it doesn't make it an amazing movie. I don't know. I think that the theatrical cut of Batman v Superman is better than the theatrical cut of Daredevil, and it's as much of an improvement.
Okay, well, there you go.
And in much the same way, by basically, like, let's restore some of the plot movements that take us towards the climax, so that the climax just doesn't come out of nowhere in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next on the list, we have news that a live-action Monster Hunter movie is on the way. The Monster Hunter franchise has never been quite as popular in the U.S. as it is in Japan, but that apparently hasn't prevented Capcom from finalizing a deal to help turn Monster Hunter into a major motion picture. During the recent Tokyo Game Show presentation from Capcom, Monster Hunter producer, informed franchise fans everywhere that a full-length Monster Hunter movie is being developed in Hollywood right this very moment. That's good news, right? Well, potentially. Without making any snap judgments regarding a movie that we haven't seen yet, it was a bit strange to learn that the upcoming film would be a live-action movie, which initially doesn't exactly seem to fit the series' most recent entrance, and especially not the decidedly more whimsical and lighthearted Monster Hunter stories coming out on the 8th of October in Japan. The producer did address this issue by saying that the movie will not be based on or even necessarily related to Monster Hunter stories. Instead, this will be an adaptation of the main console games. So, there. There's a lot of other things that are unknown, but it looks like if you are a fan of Monster Hunter, just like many in Japan are, you are probably looking forward to at least more news about this. Next, we have some news that is puzzling to me,
mm-hmm.
but Okay.
Yeah. Edmund? Well, this is news about Star Wars Rogue One, but not the sort of things we're normally talking about. But Rogue One was to be the first time that someone other than John Williams was going to be composing the score. However, originally we thought Alexandre Desplat was going to be stepping in, but that has now changed to Michael Giacchino, who has been the composer for the Star Trek reboot and also many Pixar movies. He scored The Incredibles, Ratatouille, Up, for which he did win the Oscar, Cars 2 and Inside Out. He has also worked on John Carter and Tomorrowland, and I guess most recently in terms of in theaters, also Zootopia for Disney Animation, and he is also scoring Doctor Strange, which will be his Marvel Studios debut. So with him now working on Rogue One, he will actually have worked for all four of Disney's film arms. So I would say this certainly in terms of composers is going from strength to strength. He is in fact actually a Star Wars fan and did appear as a stormtrooper in The Force Awakens, since he's buddies with J.J. Abrams, and when your buddy directs the film, you get to do things like that.
Yeah, I think he must be buddies with J.J. Abrams because most people know him for his work on a certain television show. Oh, that never gets old. All right. Once
and,
Gary
and
wakes
for,
up,
what it's worth, completely independent of just annoying Gary, his soundtracks for that show are genuinely brilliant. And,
oh yes, they are
worth listening to just on their own. Really,
quite frankly, even if one has to say that they don't necessarily enjoy the material, the score for the series is actually one of the more important elements of the show because it actually adds quite a lot to what is going on. So, Gary, if you are getting up from slamming your head into the desk, I think you have the last bit of news here. It's kind of a hybrid between movie news and casting news, but not quite casting news. This is, I put this in here for other reasons, but go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, now that I've gone through that traumatic event again. Yes, it's been recently announced that this is, I guess, uncasting, for lack of a better term. Chloe Grace Moretz has announced that she has dropped out of the live-action Little Mermaid movie. What Little Mermaid movie, you might be asking? Is Disney going back to the well? Actually, no, we're not talking about Disney at all this time around. This Little Mermaid movie is actually being put forward by Universal, and they are, as you often hear when you're discussing a property usually associated with Disney, they're going back more to the original sentiment of the Hans Christian Andersen novel. It was announced that Moretz had gotten this role after a lot of attention on who would be getting the role. Last November, she had interviewed and announced how thrilled she was to do this. However, she has recently announced at the DeVille Film Festival that she's dropping all future film projects and focusing her attention on making programs for television. This is obviously a bit of a stopping block at the moment for this Little Mermaid project. It's not the first stopping block, however. Originally, Sofia Coppola was in line to direct this, but she stepped away about a year ago because she felt that there were creative differences between her and the studio. The last mention of anyone directing this project was Rebecca Thomas, who's typically known for doing independent short films, and it was never officially announced. It just was in the rumor. So where we are at this stage, I'm not sure, but there was a note that as they were trying to stay closer to the original story, if you've actually read the book and not just watched the Disney movie, the book does not end very happily. So perhaps there will be a twist to this, another twist to this movie yet. We'll have to wait and see. But for right now, no official director, no official star. Sounds like it's going back burner to me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that means that we can move into the ever popular casting news. And Edmund, why don't you get us started off here?
Yes, I will try to do that if my browser will cooperate, which it's deciding not to do at the moment. There we go. Okay. Yeah, this was news about Zoe Saldana's film, I Kill Giants, which is, as this goes out, we'll be beginning shooting very soon in Ireland and Belgium. This is Zoe Saldana is playing a school psychologist. Actually, this is a couple of bits of casting news. We have Madison Wolf portraying a misfit girl battling both real and imaginary monsters. Anders Walter is directing, and at the Toronto International Film Festival, they announced that Imogene Poots has joined the drama, but they're not really telling us in what capacity yet. Just that she's joined the cast, so we will have to wait for the movie to come out to find out more.
I was almost wondering if that was supposed to be yet another live-action adaptation of Attack on Titan, but I guess not.
Yes.
All right, we have news coming out of the 12th season of Supernatural. Pretty Little Liars actress Kara Royster has booked a guest role in the 12th season. She will be playing Alicia, a fellow hunter who crosses paths with Sam and Dean in episode 6 of the upcoming season. Raised by a witch, Alicia and her brother Max now hunt the things that go bump in the night. Supernatural will also be featuring Rick Springfield as Lucifer in a guest arc for season 12. Additionally, the new season will see Samantha Smith return as Sam and Dean's mother, Mary Winchester, who was resurrected in the final moments of the season 11 finale. So there we are. It looks like they're really fleshing out the cast here for season 12. Next on the list, Gary, speaking of Netflix productions earlier.
Yes, and this is news about another Netflix production, specifically The Punisher. They've announced that they've cast English actor Ben Barnes, who you probably best know as Prince Caspian from The Chronicles of Narnia. It's been announced that he has been signed. They haven't officially stated what role he's going to have. The biggest rumor is that he'll play a criminal mastermind known as Bobby Saint from a Punisher lore. However, there was a rumor earlier that they were looking for casting for a supporting character known as David Microchip Lieberman, or Micro for short. He was basically the one that sort of set up all of Frank Castle's gear, whether it was anything that was electronic or set up. And of course, for longtime comic book fans, you can remember how he set up his van with every weapon imaginable for several years on end before he went on to actually turn on Frank as the series progressed. So they still have not actually given us a release date yet, but after Luke Cage, who knows? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, and next, little bit of news from James Cameron.
Yes, this was casting news for Alita: Battle Angel, which is the adaptation of the popular manga coming to us from James Cameron, who is writing and producing, and Robert Rodriguez, who is directing. This is a story that is set in the 26th century and is telling us of a female cyborg who will be played by Rosa Salazar, who is discovered in a scrapyard by a scientist with no memory of her previous life except for her deadly martial arts training. The woman becomes a bounty hunter tracking down criminals, action adventure story, but is meant to serve as a backdrop to themes of self-discovery and the search for love. And we now have word that Jackie Earle Haley has signed on. Again, they are not telling us a lot about character, but it is believed that he will play a monstrous cyborg in a villain role that will call for plenty of CG and green screen. Jackie Earle Haley in a villainous comic-related role. It does amuse me. They have all that in front of them, and they just mention that he's coming off a notable run on Preacher and don't mention Rorschach at all. But that's just silly.
Mm. Yes, it is. All right, now that it seems like all of the back and forth on whether or not Pacific Rim was going to be getting a sequel has ended, they are starting to cast that sequel. So, relative newcomer Kaylee Spaney is being cast as the female lead in Pacific Rim Maelstrom, according to Variety. She joins John Boyega and Scott Eastwood. Details on who she is going to be playing are being kept under lock and key for the moment. However, the sequel is looking to be coming out around the around February of 2018. So, brief news. This article is kind of odd because it is literally throwing about 17 different things at us, but that is the latest news, is that they have cast the female lead.
Okay.
All right, and that means that our next bit here is Gary, some news about Supergirl.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they're really starting to pack in not only characters, but, you know, actors as well into casting roles. They've recently announced that, Daishin Lachman? Close? Anyone?
Daishin Lachman, yeah.
Daishin Lachman? Okay. Best known for, and they're going to say the 100 in this article, but I still say Dollhouse, and that's what I'm going to say as far as this goes. She'll be coming to National City in the role of the character Roulette, a supervillain who operates a metahuman fight club. This character has been through several different incarnations, everything from literally running a fight club just for money between people with power, or hypnotizing them to fight and or steal for her. So what aspect of powers Roulette will have this time around, it remains to be seen. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, they have been stacking in several major characters, both on the character side as well as the actual actor side. My favorite character is a member of the Legion of Superheroes they're introducing this year, as well as Linda Carter, who will be the President of the United States. So I really have to say I enjoy the both the writers and the casting people's creativity this coming season.
There you go. All right, and that means that we have one last item here on the list. And Edmund, if you don't mind.
Certainly. This is casting news from Frequency over on the CW, and they are dipping into the Supernatural alumni. Curtis Armstrong, who has been ongoing, recurring as Metatron over on Supernatural, will be guest starring as Carl Pierce, a manipulative and charming former quantum physics professor who has gone to the dark side. He is described as a wily trickster, small T, not the trickster, who most likely went over the edge long ago, but instead wears the mask of an erratic genius. So he'll be brought in. He is in prison for murdering his neighbor and arranges a meeting with our lead character, Detective Raimi Sullivan, played by Peyton List, insisting he has important information for her. And given his quantum physics background, we can assume it's probably time related.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it would certainly seem to be that way. And that is it for our news segment for this particular week. So, yeah. Any last thoughts on the news, gentlemen?
Yeah, I don't want to wait till May for new Star Trek.
I think we all agree with that feeling.
You didn't have to live through the 70s. Yeah.
That's true. That's a good point, well made.
Mm. Fair enough. All right, well, we are therefore going to go ahead and wrap this one up. When we come back next time, we will be getting into some episodic discussion eventually and probably into a few open topics. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.